It's a delight to be here with you this morning to talk about what is, beyond a doubt, the most urgent moral issue of our day, and the worst tragedy, the worst emergency that our nation has ever been in, the tragedy of the daily killing of 4,400 innocent babies in the place which should be the most safe, the most caring, their own mother's womb. You know, in Hebrew, the word for womb and the word for mercy come from the same root. It's the same word, essentially. It should be the place of mercy, and instead it has become a place of dismemberment, torture, and death, a place of rejection in so many cases. And there's a lot that we can say about the destruction of the children by abortion every day through all 9 months of the pregnancy. There's a lot that we can say about the harm that it does to the children and the harm that it does to our whole society. But being in your presence today, I want to focus on the harm that it does to women. Not only to the mother who goes to get the abortion, but to all women everywhere. Without exaggeration, abortion, and abortion being promoted in this country in a legalized way under the banner of women's rights and women's dignity and freedom of choice, is the biggest, cruelest hoax which has ever been perpetrated on women in the history of the world. I was protesting against abortion in New York not too long ago, and there was a group of people praying the rosary there, and there was a small group of counter-demonstrators supporting abortion who were there also, and the people had been there for a while, and then I arrived, and I carry in the trunk of my car a big poster that says, "Abortion exploits women." So I took the sign out of my car and went onto the sidewalk and joined the pro-lifers. Well, when the pro-abortion people saw me with this sign, they went berserk. They couldn't take it. They started howling and screaming and hollering, and one of them came over to me and he said, "Well, I've seen a lot of dumb signs, but that one's the dumbest. Abortion exploits women." The dumbest. Why did they get so angry that I was holding that sign? The reason they got so angry was because I was stealing away from them the moral high ground that they try to stand on. They try to present themselves to the public as the defenders and champions of women's rights. And there I was, a pro-lifer and a priest, standing on the sidewalk showing that I had some concern for women, and showing that the thing that they promote as so good for women, namely the right to abortion, actually does not serve them or help them, but exploits them. And so this made them extremely angry. But the fact that this man called it a dumb sign only proves how uninformed he is about how abortion indeed hurts women. I have in my office at home a stack of papers this high, 1,100 case studies, women writing in their own words how abortion has destroyed them. Each one of them had at least one abortion. And she writes about the circumstances that surrounded the abortion and about the physical, psychological, and spiritual harm that has come about in her life as a result. I wish that everybody who promotes abortion and those who go out to these places as so-called escorts leading the women in could hear the confession of one woman who has had an abortion. I've been out at these places on Saturday mornings and I've said to these people, "You know, you're escorting these women in here today for an abortion. Who's going to escort them after the abortion through the pain and the grief and the despair and the torment? Where are you going to be then? See, then, they're off the scene. They do their work on Saturday morning. We pick up the pieces on Saturday night. When these women come into the confessional and you hear how this has just destroyed their peace of soul. Testimony after testimony shows how true this is. And many people have been working in the area of research into the after effects of abortion, both physical and psychological. As a matter of fact, there's psychiatrist by the name of Julius Fogel, who is actually an abortionist as well. And he says that if a woman destroys her child, she destroys herself. And doesn't it make sense? The relationship between a mother and child is the closest relationship you can possibly have between any two human beings. So how can you destroy one without destroying the other? Obviously, it's going to have an effect. And to be pro-life means to be pro-woman. In fact, on my business card for Priest for Life, that's the saying that I have up in the corner of the card. Pro-woman, pro-child, pro-life. We cannot love one without loving the other. You can't love the child without loving the mother, and you certainly can't love the mother while allowing her own child to be destroyed. See, the difference between the pro-life movement and the pro-abortion movement is not that we love the child and they love the woman. That's the way that they try to present it to the rest of society. Oh, these people are just fetus lovers, you know, we're the ones defending women's rights. Nonsense. That's not the difference between the two movements. The difference is not that we love the child and they love the mother. The difference is that we say you cannot separate the two, and they think you can. They think that we love the child without caring about the mother, and they think that they can love the mother while not caring about the child. We say, why can't we love them both? In fact, we must love them both. It's silly to say you love the mother while dismembering her child. And it's simply silly to say that we care about the children without caring for the mother. And the pro-life movement has always cared for the mother. In fact, the bulk of the pro-life movement, the majority of the time and the resources and the people working in it are spent doing what? They are spent providing alternatives to abortion, providing help for women who are going to these abortion mills not because of freedom of choice, but precisely because they believe they have no choice. I was praying in front of one of these abortion mills in Dallas, Texas, not too long ago, and the name of the place is A Choice for Women. And I thought to myself, how cruel that is for the woman who's walking in here because she feels trapped, because she's in despair, because she feels that she's going to lose her relationship with the father of the baby, because she feels that she's going to get kicked out of her house or lose her job or lose her educational opportunities or just she just can't handle this child. She feels she has no choice. And here are these people making money off of her very serious situation and calling it a choice for women. It's cruel. A hoax. It's an exploitation of that woman's problems. The pro-life movement, we are the ones who provide the real concrete assistance for such women. And if there's anything we can do to save lives and bring an end to abortion, it is to repeat far and wide and to spread among everyone you know this promise, namely that any woman from any place of any national or religious background who is pregnant and in need, can come to the pro-life movement, can come to the church, can come to me personally. We will see to it that all the help she needs will be given to her. Financial help, medical assistance, legal advice, counseling, a place to stay, job opportunities, education opportunities, assistance to keep the child, help to place the child for adoption, and any other needs she may have. The help is available. There are over 4,000 helping centers throughout the country. There are networks. There are phone numbers that this woman can call from no matter where she lives, and they will network her. They will put her in touch with the places closest to her where she can find the assistance that she needs. No woman should ever feel that she must choose an abortion or that is her only option. And one of the things I have for you here today is this little sheet that says what we can do to stop abortion. And please make sure that each of you take one of these. On the back, there are three of these telephone numbers that I'm referring to. There are 800 numbers that can be accessed from anywhere in the country and that will provide help for anyone in the country. And one of them is 1-800-848-LOVE, love. And this number, for example, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, someone will answer that phone, and help will be available. So, let nobody say that we're against women. This is a nonsensical statement that some people try to make in order to discredit the pro-life movement. Let's look at some of the ways that abortion harms women and exploits them. Let's look at some of the ways that abortionists take advantage of these situations that the women find themselves in, and look at some of the physical and psychological after effects of this particular action. First of all, the lies. You may have heard, you're probably familiar with Carol Everett, who herself ran abortion mills as a living and now has come out of the abortion industry and for years now has spoken and written about the fact that being in the abortion industry was not a question of serving women. It was a question of making money. This is what was driving her and driving those that she worked with. And she says, and she's not the only one, there is a whole network of former abortion providers. As a matter of fact, next month in Chicago, there will be a conference given by former abortion providers, and they will share why it is that they came out of the abortion industry. But they all tell us the same thing, that their goal, when a woman came to them, was to sell her an abortion. So don't think of it in the nice glowing terms that they try to present it as, oh, we're here for the service of women. They're here to sell her an abortion. And so Carol says, well, you know, the two questions that were most frequently asked were, is it a baby? And does it hurt? And they would deliberately deceive these women. They would be trained how to convince her that the abortion was the right thing to do. Is it a baby? Oh, no, no, this is just a piece of tissue. Piece of tissue? You might as well say that the earth is flat. Take a look into any textbook on medical science, on embryology. This is just an outright lie. It's silly. I was privileged to see one time a one-inch baby boy, the result of a miscarriage. A friend of mine who works in labor and delivery was helping this woman. She was only 7.5 weeks along in the pregnancy, and the child came out dead but intact, and they are asking to arrange for the burial of this child, which we then did in one of the Catholic cemeteries. But she brought the child over to me in a tube, and there was the baby, 1 inch, perfectly formed, having both his hands up to his mouth, getting ready to suck his thumbs, and I saw, you know, 10 fingers and 10 toes and shoulders and the knees and the elbows and the feet. And most of the abortions are taking place after this point. So something is wrong here when people try to deceive women into saying, oh, you know, this is just a blood clot. You know, it's nothing but a lie. And of course, what happens is what? If the woman believes the lie and goes through with the abortion, tell me what happens to her when later on she finds out that the child had a beating heart and brain waves and arms and legs. then she begins to feel the grief and the pain that she didn't know was coming. They're lied to. Is it a baby? Does it hurt? And they're told, oh, the abortion will be a very safe and simple procedure. And they find out that it's not. And they find out the pain that comes as a result. They're lied to. Carol Everett is not the only one, as I mentioned. In fact, one of the former abortion providers is a friend of mine by the name of Joy Davis. She lives in Birmingham, Alabama. And she spent 12 years of her life running 6 abortion mills in Mississippi and Alabama. And just last year, she came out of the abortion industry. Praise God, she jumped from the abortion industry into the Catholic Church. She had never been baptized, and she entered the church and was baptized just this past Easter. But she ran 6 of these places, and she helped do abortions herself. And she was telling me recently, she said, Father, we didn't even sterilize the instruments that we used on these women. And I said, why in the world didn't you do that? She says, oh, well, you see, it would have taken too much time. We just wanted to get as many abortions done as possible. And then the story that now she's going around doing full-time pro-life work, and she's sharing her testimony around the country. And in fact, I can get a tape of her testimony if you'd like. But she said that one of the things that shook her up the most was the day when a woman came in for an abortion, and she had to do the initial interview. And she was honest and caring enough about this woman to deny her the abortion because the woman had some high-risk medical problems that would have made the abortion even more dangerous than it already is. So she denied her the abortion. And when the abortionist found out that Joy had denied the woman, he said, well, now, why did you do that? We need the money. Push her through. Let her have the abortion. So Joy got back in touch with the woman and said, well, we changed our mind. Come and have the abortion. So the abortionist did the abortion, and then there were complications afterwards. She was bleeding, and the bleeding wouldn't stop. So Joy was there taking care of her while the doctor had gone off to do the next abortion, and she couldn't stop the bleeding. So she went to the abortionist. She says, you know, you have to do something for this girl. I can't help her. And he said, well, you take care of it. You do what you can. I'm busy. I have more abortions to do, and I have to catch a plane. So Joy tried to take care of this girl. She wasn't a doctor. She couldn't stop the bleeding, and then the girl was having difficulty breathing and all the rest. So Joy, realizing she couldn't do any more, decided to call the ambulance. When the abortionist found out, and if I hadn't heard this with my own words, I wouldn't have believed this. When the abortionist found out that she called the ambulance, she canceled the call. And the reason was, oh, you see, it's not good for the image of the abortion mill for people to see an ambulance come. It might give abortion a bad name. So she tried to do what she could, and finally she says to him, you know, this woman is going to die if you don't do something. So finally, after yelling and screaming and cursing, he called the ambulance again. And it took 20 minutes for it to get there. And meanwhile, he left to go catch his plane. And Joy finally got the woman into the ambulance, but unfortunately, she died later that day. Now, at this point, Joy realized, you know, I am not serving women here. This is not. It's not only that these things are happening, but how these abortionists just don't care, and they do everything possible to cover up what has happened. In fact, Carol Everett talks about situations like this that happened to her, where the abortionist, if he realized he had to send the woman to the hospital, would get in touch with some of his doctor friends over there and say, would you please cover up the fact that this happened as a result of abortion? And so they put something else on the medical records, whether the woman survives or not. You know, if she dies, they'll put something else as the cause of death. They'll say something like, you know, internal bleeding or infection, not indicating the fact that the bleeding and the infection came about because of abortion. Oh, no, they'll hide that. And so the bottom line is, we don't know how many women are dying even now because of this. The fact that it's legal, you know, these cases that I've mentioned here, this is from legal abortion. The fact that it's legal has not made it safe. Sometimes people in arguing about abortion will say, well, now, you don't want to make it illegal again, do you? We'll go back to the back alley butchers. Well, I have news for you. All that happened in 1973 when abortion was legalized in all the 50 states without the consent of the American people, all that happened in 1973 was that the back alley butchers took their nameplates off the back door and put them on the front door. That's it. It hasn't become any safer. Because these people who were if abortionists were doing abortions illegally, they were still doing them with the benefit of the medical technology that has come about. If you look at the records that we have, of the numbers of women who died from abortions, both before and after it was legalized, you notice that the decrease of such deaths did not come about in the 1970s when this was legalized. There was no change in the rate of decrease in the deaths of such women. The change came about in the 1940s. And the reason was that this is when antibiotics began to be used. And as medicine developed with the use of the ability to treat infections, intensive care units, and the improvement, if you can even use the word, in the techniques of doing abortion, that is what decreased the numbers of deaths of women from abortion, not the legalization. Because although it is legal, it is the number one most unregulated industry in the country. Joy was telling me that even the times when the mills that she ran were inspected, it was a joke. They would tell them a month or two ahead of time that they were coming, and then when give them a chance, to make things look good. And when they came and they saw all the abuses, they never followed through on correcting any of them. This is an unregulated $500 million a year industry, and it's harming women. I have here a list of names of women who died from so-called safe and legal abortions. A couple of hundred of them here. These are those that we know about. So many others that we do not know about. But all the details are here, her name, her age, her race, the date of death, the place of death, the abortionist, and the source of the information. I have here an autopsy report of a woman who died not too far from where I live in New York as a result of her so-called safe and legal abortion. And on and on. Now, understand that those who have promoted abortion have lied about the numbers of women who died prior to legalized abortion. This is a big lie. They always used to say, and some of them still say today, 5,000 to 10,000 women every year were dying because abortions. They got abortions that weren't legal. You know what that is? That's a lie. How do we know it's a lie? Well, we know it in a couple of ways. We know it, first of all, because those who made up the lie have admitted that it was a lie. You know Dr. Bernard Nathanson from New York? He's one of a few people who got the abortion movement started in this country back in the 60s. They got together and they plotted and they planned and they said, how are we going to take away the laws that make abortion illegal? How can we convince the media and the American public that this is good? So they would sit around and they wrote reports, statistical reports that they sent out to all the major news outlets across the country about how abortion was a good thing and how 5,000 to 10,000 were dying every year from illegal abortion and this has to stop and so forth. Now, I was with Dr. Madison. I'm in communication with him fairly regularly. And he was giving a talk to some clergy in New York, and he stood there at a podium just like this, and he said to us, now, what statistics were we talking about? And he looked up at the ceiling and he went like this and he said, I don't know. We made them up out of thin air. And he says, now let me quote him directly. He writes, when we spoke of the latter, meaning the number of deaths of women, it was always 5,000 to 10,000 deaths a year. I confess that I knew the figures were totally false. And I suppose the others did too, if they stopped to think of it. But in the, quote, morality of our revolution, it was a useful figure, widely accepted. So why go out of our way to correct it with honest statistics? Now, besides the admission like this, that it was an outright lie, We can also tell that it wasn't true by looking at the numbers of women of childbearing age who died from any cause. If it was true that this many died from illegal abortion and that legal abortion has solved the problem, then you would expect, if you look at the charts, to notice that in 1973, when it became legal, all of a sudden the number of deaths of women from any cause would decrease by 5,000 to 10,000. Wouldn't that stand to reason? But when you look at the charts, you do not see any such change from 1972 to 1973 or 1974. It's just not there. So we have on our hands a situation where the women of our country have been, again, exploited and lied to, and their sense of, you know, self-preservation and well-being has led many of them to think that because this is now legal, it's safe. Now, there's another report that I have here from several abortionists who are writing about the physical after effects of this particular procedure, and there are a lot of physical after effects that are not death, but that are very serious. For example, one of the things that happens in abortion is uterine perforation. Now, understand that when the abortionist is going in there with his curette to scrape out the child, he's working blindly. He can't see what he's doing. He does it by feel. And he's talking about a very sharp instrument. If you're scraping the lining of the uterus, what can happen very easily? That sharp instrument, while it's tearing up the baby, can also tear the uterus. It can perforate it. Now, what happens, of course, in these cases, is it can lead to a number of very serious consequences that might be evident right away, but that might not be. The perforation might be so small that the woman nor the doctor will know that it's there. But what happens if she gets pregnant again? What happens with pregnancy? The uterus expands. If there's a little puncture in it, what do you think happens when it expands? The puncture expands as well. You're talking about a very serious, life-threatening situation. Now, these are not my words. These are the words of three abortionists writing in a medical journal. They're writing about the frequency and management of uterine perforations during first trimester abortions, which is when most of the abortions, 90% of the abortions, take place. Here's the conclusion of their study. Quote, "In conclusion, we feel that most uterine perforations go unrecognized and untreated." End of quote. They're admitting it themselves. Now, besides uterine perforations, you have, bleeding, such as that woman that Joy Davis had to handle, hemorrhage. You have what's called cervical incompetence and damage to the cervix. Now, what happens here is, especially as the abortions go later into the pregnancy, the cervical muscle, when during a pregnancy, is shut tight in order to hold the baby until it's time for birth. Well, what is an abortion doing? It's forcing the muscle open when it's not supposed to be. Okay, the body is saying it's not time for birth, and the abortion is saying, well, I don't care, I'm going to force it open anyway. What happens to a muscle if you do that? You can tear it, you can weaken it. And so what happens very often is, as a result of the abortion, a subsequent pregnancy comes about, which perhaps the mother wants now, but the cervical muscle has been weakened, and sometimes it is not capable of sustaining that subsequent child. And so what happens is that a miscarriage results. Abortion leads to the deaths of many children who are wanted in a subsequent pregnancy. There is also endometriosis. In ways that are not fully understood, abortions often render the woman infertile. Three to four times more a risk of infertility or three times more a risk of labor complications later on. Women who've had abortions have 8 to 10 times more frequent miscarriages. And in general, 40 to 50% of women who get abortions have reproductive problems later on. Now, there's a serious physical after effect which we haven't heard too much about, but which is fortunately is becoming more and more known. And it is the link between abortion and breast cancer. Now, scientists have noticed that every society, every culture and subculture that has liberalized abortion and that has had more and more abortions, without exception, has had an increased rate of breast cancer.